Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love, who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. I want to first thank those joining us here on the radio side of our program that's tuning in to 92.3 FM. Let's welcome our good friends joining us online around the world, thanks to blogtalkradio.com, either through our switchboard, our live chat, or our podcast. We're glad to have all of you with us. Best-selling author Attica Locke is back with us this afternoon to talk to us not only about the overwhelming success of her book, The Cutting Season, but today's very special for her, as the book is being released in paperback today. We're going to talk about the characters, a little bit about the storyline that I think you guys will enjoy, and of course let you know how you can get your own copy of the book. Attica, good afternoon to you, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Attica, I went back and listened to our previous conversation, which was just about a year ago to the month that you were on last time talking to us about The Cutting Season, and I was asking you about this experience and what this literary journey has been like for you, and there were three things that you said. You said it was unexpected, it was fantastic, but pretty incredible. Now here we are a year after the release of The Cutting Season. Do you feel that those same feelings and emotions as you're looking at the success of this book?
Yes, I feel all of those, and more, I guess. You know, just humbled, and I feel a tremendous amount of gratitude.
Yeah. You know, this story is really, when someone was asking me exactly, you know, what I thought about the book, and when we first said that you were coming back on to talk about it, this book is not to me it's not about black and white. It really is about a sense of right and wrong. Would you agree with that, Attica?
I would agree with it and want to put it on a T-shirt. I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, to me, is part of why it has worked. I mean, you have these characters, and I think you don't read – well, for me, I didn't even think about what race the characters were. But you have this story that is really, I think, about the importance of not only being fully present in where you are, but also, you know, being appreciative of the journey that you've come from, wherever that journey may have been. For you, I mean, would you put a big mission accomplished on this when you think about the conversations that have come out of this book, Attica, as well as the way that people have responded to the characters? Is this what you expected?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I think because of my personality, I've been uncomfortable by some of the controversy around the book and around the book's ending, which I won't talk about, but people have had really strong opposite reactions, and, you know, they just fall in two camps, that the end, you know, hit it for them spiritually, psychologically, and then other people who felt like, no, it should have ended this whole other different way. And so I was kind of shocked by that a little bit, you know, the passion behind people's reactions. And also, I'm not the kind of person who actually likes to sit that much in the middle of a controversy or likes to just stir stuff up and see it happen. So I'm actually learning how to be comfortable that I, you know, it's not like I delivered for everybody a perfect, happy ending. You know, it has stirred a lot of conversations. And some of those conversations I get invited into in terms of book clubs and speaking publicly, but other times I'm just hearing that, you know, people are having these really passionate reactions to the ending of the book in particular.
Yeah. Well, you know you've done something, Attica, when you have people that will argue over a book. You know, that says a whole lot in itself, that you have people that are that invested. You know, I know that you have, as someone who's a lover of words, I know you probably have had your strong feelings about characters and, you know, conflicted emotions about things you've read. You know, is that something that you know, well, I guess it goes back to the question I was initially asking. Is that part of what we talked about last year, the validation? Is that part of the validation for you that you've done something because it's stirring at least some feeling and emotions in people?
I rarely think of it that way. If anything, I feel a kind of sense of shock at the ownership people feel over something I made. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the depth to which people are free once it's away from me and in a bookstore and they pick it up, they're having their own separate relationship with the material that might involve me and might not. I mean, I remember going to one book club and this woman was like, now, how do you pronounce the main character's name? Is it Karen or Karen? And I said, no, it's Karen. Well, I'm just going to keep calling her Karen. You know, and then other people who were arguing with me about whether or not Eric in the book really loved Karen. And I would be in the room saying, but I'm right here telling you yes. And they're like, no, I don't think he did. And so it always shocks me, people taking, and I have to own, I have to respect that. You know, their relationship with the book is not being dictated by me. I wrote something, but their readers are free to have a completely different experience with it.
Right. And I think that is, again, one of the exciting things. You got to love book clubs, though. I mean, I tell you, they will, they are a force within themselves.
I always have so much fun at book clubs.
Well, you know what, and this is definitely a great one, I think, for book clubs. For those that are just tuning in, you're listening to Conversations Live. Attica Locke is back with us. She's the best-selling author of the book, The Cutting Season. It is a book that takes us into not only, I think, a difficult part of the past for some, but also, I think, really a realization about, you know, about our lives in the present and who made us the way that we are and what made us the way that we are. With the character Karen, we see that a lot. Karen Gray is a character that, you know, seems to be in a good place. But looks are not always as they seem to be. And there are some things that go on in the book. And as you say, we don't have to get too much into that. But I think it really helps us to understand that for some, the past is never fully gone. Do you think one of the great lessons, even though it is fiction, you know, people like me are going to always look for lessons and things to take away, Attica. But do you think one of the takeaways, at least for Karen, maybe I'll put it that way, for as the character, was that, you know, it's not enough to acknowledge what has happened. There has to be some form of, if not absolution, at least some form of peace that comes with it.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, so this book is set, you know, on a plantation, but in 2009. And it's one of these historical tourism sites. It was based on this place called Oak Alley in Vacherie, Louisiana. I went to a wedding there once years ago. And Karen, this character, is somebody for whom her family goes back on this land for generations, back to slavery times, and then after slavery they were sharecroppers, and after they were sharecroppers, her mother was actually the cook in the kitchen for the family that bought it out. And so Karen now finds herself, she had tried to flee the plantation and had a great deal of shame about being the daughter of a plantation's cook. And she tried to flee to New Orleans, but after Katrina, has no place to go and ends up coming back to this place. And now she's actually running it as a general manager. She puts together school tours and people's weddings and parties because it's an events venue. And what was striking to me about Karen is the idea that, you know, she has literally arrived in the big house. Her office is upstairs in that big old white-columned house. And she can look out on the fields where her ancestors cut sugarcane. But there is a fundamental emptiness in economic ascent and class ascent if other people aren't coming up with you. Because now when she looks out in those fields, what she sees are migrant workers who have no rights, who are now the ones cutting sugarcane. And so there's a sense of kind of like an emptiness around or a question about what is true success. Is it that you just then move up the ladder and then somebody else moves into the low rung that you were in? Or might we need to kind of change the whole structure of things?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that is, again, one of the interesting things. You mentioned Eric earlier, and there was, when I went back when we knew we were going to be able to talk to you again with the release of the paperback, I went back to reread The Cutting Season. And I have to say, it is true what they say, people. When you read something again, you pick up on things that you did not pick up on before. There was a reference that was made, and even though it wasn't a big deal made of it, Attica, I think to me it kind of, as the mystery of this is unfolding, we understand why, you know, well, one of the reasons at least why Karen is so invested. There's this conversation that you have in the book between Karen and Eric where they're talking about being back in school and almost having like mock trials. Mm-hmm. And a part of that, you know, I totally missed that, I have to be honest with you, the first time around reading this book, because I was just like, okay, she's, you know, here she is on this plantation, this thing has happened, you know, she does not believe the person who they think is involved really was involved. But, you know, but the second time around, you're like, okay, you're looking at the, you know, the building of the circumstantial evidence. You know, talk to us about that, you know, in your own curious nature about life. Do you see a lot of that aspect of yourself in this character, Karen, the want to know, or at least to be able to better understand why people feel the way they feel?
Okay, well, you also, I mean, just thinking about law and cases and how people, you know, arrive at who they think is responsible. You're talking to the person who both watched the Jodi Arias trial and the George Zimmerman trial gavel to gavel. I'm married to a lawyer. I'm the daughter of a lawyer. I'm really fascinated by how people try and scratch at the truth and how imperfect we are at it. And sometimes we're imperfect at it because there really is something ugly behind it, potentially something racist or sexist that's leading people to come to a quote-unquote truth about who did something or another. But sometimes we're just fallible, and we just make mistakes. Or you can make assumptions. I'm thinking today, my God, about that guy in North Carolina. And this horrible thing happened, the guy who was in the accident and went to the door at 2:30 in the morning. That woman's assumption about what that meant for that person of that color to show up at her door at that hour set this whole thing in motion. And I'm just really, as a writer, fascinated by just where we as human beings are fallible. And if you shine a light on it, might we be better the next time around?
Yeah. There is, for Karen, it seems like, and I picked up on this, and I remember reading it, but I look at it differently now. So I want to ask you this question then, Attica, about Karen and the way that the story does kind of, evolve. Is there such a thing, and I think this is something, a question for all of us to ask ourselves, is there such a thing as too much truth? You know, can we accept just a part of the truth and be okay with that, or is it necessary for the entirety of what is seen as the truth to come out? Is that a question that you think, is that a legitimate question as you see as the story unfolds that Karen does grapple with?
Well, I mean, I as a writer would have to start with just the idea that is there a single truth, or is everybody just walking around with their version of what the truth is? And, you know, that's where we come up with so many of our fundamental misunderstandings and so many of our hurts toward each other, is that I think a bunch of people are, we're all walking around with what we think is the truth, but it's really our interpretation and our version of it. I don't know if that really answered the question, but, I mean, I don't know that there's a place where we all gather, other than that the sky is blue. That's about all we could get everybody to agree on.
Hopefully, at least. Hopefully we can agree on that. For some people, I think the jury stays out. I think there are some people that just have to argue for argument's sake. I think they just cannot allow there to be. So do you think, though, even though this book is set where it's set, even though these characters are dealing with, especially those, you know, in Karen's family are dealing with what they're dealing with, that the universal message for a lot of us can be the fact that where you are today and where you're able to go doesn't have to be defined by where you come from?
I completely agree with that. And if anybody takes that away from the book, that would mean a lot to me. But part of what's required in that is for you to work through whatever emotional and psychological baggage you have about where you're from. It's not enough to just say, well, it doesn't matter where you're from. You know, you can achieve anything in this world and in this country. If you're walking around like Karen at the beginning of the book with a lot of baggage about where you're from and shame, then you are stuck. There can be no grace for you, or there can be no success for you. So everything is open to everybody, but in order to have the courage to even reach for a big dream, you have to get out of what story you have in your head about where you're from and what that means about the limits or the limits of what's possible.
I'm so glad that you said that, Attica, because, you know, you have opened up the door for people, I think, as to what is possible for them through your own experience. What has that been like for you? Because just as you have readers that are very invested in these characters that you've created, you also have individuals that are looking at what you've been able to do with your debut, with this book, and think, wow, you know, maybe that dream that I have is not so far-fetched. What has that been like to have aspiring authors and anyone that has thought about doing something be able to use your life as an example of what is possible for them?
Oh, wow. That's, well, I mean, I think that's kind of why we're all kind of here together on this planet. And if I'm doing that for somebody else, that's fantastic because other people have done it for me. And so, you know, then I would hope that anybody I inspire would then take that and inspire somebody else. So I definitely feel like that's a part of the, I don't know, the cycle of giving or just what it means to be in, you know, a part of a writing community, certainly, that I think there's a real give and take. And I'm humbly happy to be a part of this community. And if I have anything to offer, take it from me. And then I, you know, people have also been so gracious with me. And so, I mean, I remember when I first learned that Dennis Lehane was going to be publishing this book under his imprint. And I read some of the things that he said that he wanted to do with this imprint. I mean, he is a writer who really kind of walks his talk about wanting to support newer authors. And my thought was, you know what? This is just a wonderful thing that's happened to me. I'm going to look for the rest of my life then on where I might be able to reach out and help other authors coming up.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. Again, and this book is even the character Karen and where she is an example of possibilities, of what is possible. To come from where she comes from, the stock that she comes from, the strength that she comes from, you know, has pretty much laid the way for what she is able to do. This is a question I did not ask you the first time that you and I spoke, Attica, because we had such a great time talking about everything else. But do you think we've seen the last of Karen?
Well, I don't know, because I said I've seen the last of Jay, and I'm sitting here editing a manuscript right now with Jay in it, Jay Porter, for my first book. So
yeah.
I don't know that I'm the best person to ask, because I always think, you know, when I finish, you know, whatever, it's two books. I haven't been doing this for 30 years. But when I finished the first book, I was just shocked that anybody thought that there was more to say. And yet, here I am, you know, looking at that character again. So I really actually will be wrong for me to answer that, because who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? All right. So that gives us some hope. That gives us some hope that we will see. Because I could almost now that, you know, like I said, that second time through, I'm like, wait a minute. You know, Karen could have her own series. She could go around solving mysteries. I mean, there's just so many different things, you know, that I can see now that you know, she's being able to do. And so I think, you know, that was one of the interesting things. But hey,
I would be interested in exploring more with her in a different medium. Somebody has said to me, and I see it completely, that they actually see, rather than a movie being made of this book, a television series.
Okay.
And that really was interesting to me. And, you know, that this book would be kind of like season one. And, again, not to give too much away, but season two would begin with the fight about the land and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it's hard for me to picture myself doing a series with her in novels, but I'd be interested to see her in a different way and would love to even participate.
All right. Well, hey, I'm sure there's someone that's listening to that I'm sure that they would agree with that. Who knows? Maybe the next year when we're talking, you'll be talking to us about a lifetime series.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Exactly. Well, congratulations again, Attica. Attica Locke again, everyone, the best-selling author of The Cutting Season. Attica, let our listeners know how they can stay in contact with you and how they can get their own copy of the book, please.
Well, my website is my full name, atticalocke.com. atticalocke.com. And, of course, there are links on there to purchase through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or my favorite, IndieBound. And then I'm also on Twitter at Attica Locke. And then same for Facebook. You can just look me up, Attica Locke.
All right. Well, congratulations again to you on the big day today. The book being available right now in paperback. Make sure you guys go and get it. It is available on Amazon.com, as she mentions. And make sure you go to her website at AtticaLock.com for all the details about what's coming up for Attica. And continue blessings to you, Attica. And you, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you. Thank you, Cyrus.
Hey, glad to have you back. And for you guys, thank you all for tuning in to another edition of our program. And if you came in late and missed part of the show, don't worry. You can catch the entire podcast about 5 minutes as we go off the air. All you have to do is go to our radio website at conversationsliveradio.com. That's conversations with an S, liveradio.com. Also, if you're friends with us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, the link's already available on both of those places. And we did tag Attica both on Facebook and Twitter. So you can find her by going to our page at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free, thanks to our friends at Blog Talk. And then, of course, you can share it with your friends using the social media buttons that you'll find there underneath the player. That's going to do it for us for this part of our show. Until next time, I'm Cyrus Webb saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music and, of course, a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live this afternoon. You guys make it a great one.